Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your mega preview pod for this week's RSM Classic / DP World Tour. It's storylines, it's best bets, it's one and done. Joining me to break it all down, Greg Ducharme is here. What's up, Greg?
What's going on, guys? Another week getting close to the holiday season. This is kind of an exciting time. So it feels like things are slowing down in the game, but they're not. So we have a lot of exciting things coming up, including the two big events we have this week. So exciting.
There you go. And joining us from the beautiful twilight hour in Central Time, right? You're in Central Time, aren't you?
That's right.
Kyle Porter. Look how good this picture looks. I cannot get over this.
I got a fresh haircut. I got a crisp, camera here.
Wow.
My question is, speaking of the holidays, have you started your research on the categories for me and Greg's Trivia Showdown 2021 edition?
So believe it or not, it's like betting futures. You're never done. It's an all year round process, right? So I've got an Excel, a Google sheet that I add things to throughout the year. And then as we get closer, producer Jacob and I will work together to find out what are the most fair, what are the most challenging, what are the good formats, and we will pick your brains. It'll be very
fun. Did you guys watch Stump the Schwab when it was on?
Yeah, I love Stump the Schwab.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, Kyle, but as soon as you mentioned that, my hands started sweating. I'm nervous. The other thing I wanted to ask you, speaking of Twilight Hour, did you figure anything out about your daylight savings? I know you were going to just go on your own time.
We made a family project out of it, actually. I got the kids involved. We figured out that I'm going to just massively screw this up and probably have another state or country mad at me, but I believe in the 1700s, England had to skip 13 days because they had their times wrong and their daylight savings wrong. This thing is way bigger than us. It goes way back. We got a lot of problems with daylight savings. But yeah, I'm still frustrated by it. I was up this morning early writing, and it's 6:30 and the sun's coming up. I'm like, I don't want to sit in the sunlight at 6:30 in the morning. And
wearing sunglasses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And now I want to go throw the football after I'm done here with my kids, and it's going to be dark. We should move on. Nobody wants to hear me talk about this.
Believe it or not, we get the best reception we get on this podcast is when we talk about things that are not golf related. That is the best outcome for this podcast is that we come on here, Greg, under the guise of golf, and we just talk about whatever. I think that's the path to us being successful.
Yeah, whether it's daylight savings or the grocery store conversation we slipped into. I don't even know how we got there on Monday, but that was fun. We've had a couple of other good ones.
What was the grocery store? I have some grocery store takes.
Well, okay. Let us know what's your go-to grocery store? What's the one you frequent the most?
So we have a place in Dallas called Sprouts, which is I would describe it as it's certainly not Whole Foods or Central Market, but it's not it's not Kroger. It's somewhere in the middle of those two.
I thought Sprouts was like a market. No, I don't know how to describe it. It's I don't know what word I'm looking for. This is off the rails.
Producer Jacob said it's kind of a fresh market.
Okay, I was thinking of farmer's market. That's what I was thinking of.
I think fresh market is a good comparison. It's a little smaller than a fresh market, and it's not it's not a Central Market, which I think of as pretty high-end grocery store, but it's better than your, I'm like Aldi or Kroger. I'm trying to think of others. We also have a Tom Thumb, which is okay, but it's way too expensive. Go ahead, Rick.
The thing that kicked us off is that Sian Ajad said that grocery shopping, and Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, he said is a low key top three activity or something like that. Yeah, and I was like, get out of town.
So I agree with that. I like not even as a chore, but as a like an act as like a this I sound like I'm 100, but as a social activity, I think it's great.
Oh, yeah.
Like I see people in my town. I get to go like shop for food that I'm going to consume. On Sunday after church, I took our kids. They get to pick stuff out, and I had them guess like the price of our grocery bill after. Like it's just like it's a learning experience. It's wonderful. And here's the holdup in our house though. And my wife and I have legit arguments about this. She wants to do like the delivery, like the grocery delivery.
Yeah.
But she does it from Walmart, which Walmart's fine, whatever. I don't think their selection of food and whatever is as good as a place like Sprouts. And so I'm like, listen, you don't even worry about you don't have to do any of this. I will do everything. Mm-hmm. I will take the kids, you can get some time alone. I will shop, it'll be good time with them. It'll be great time like out in our community. But she insists on doing the delivery thing, and it creates legitimate problems at our home. Are you guys going to invoice me for the therapy here, for the counseling session?
Well, next time you'll have to sit on Jacob's new couch.
That's true. Jacob, show us your couch. Jacob got a new couch. I don't know if he's around to show us his new. Look, Jacob got a new couch in the background. I always love. There Perfect. You go. That's where he can just go lay down and just tell us everything Talk that's gone wrong in his life. Yeah.
Maybe you could help me get through the grocery store anxiety. And when I go into a grocery store, I'm like a deer on ice. I don't know where to go. I'm looking around. People could see me. I could see people I know, high school best friends, and I'm not even going to recognize them because I don't know my way around in there. And so maybe that's a personal problem. And the more I talk, the more it sounds like it. But the grocery store is not for me. Delivering groceries is a actual lifesaver. It's one of my, I think it's one of the greatest inventions of all time.
Of all time?
Yeah.
It's like for fire me, the
what
wheel.
What is the greatest invention of all time? Air conditioning.
That's a good one.
I mean, probably fire, right?
I don't know. We would have been okay. Well.
Fire's
is that an invention?
Is it an invention? Yeah, it's kind of natural.
Fire's natural. That's the wheel.
The wheel's
the wheel has to be right up.
All right,
first weapon.
It's got to be the wheel. Excluding the wheel, the wheel's got to be the answer. Excluding the wheel.
I think Velcro is a pretty good one. I'm a big Velcro. Fan of that.
I thought it was hook and latch. Hook and
ladders.
It is. It's
hook and ladders.
See, like, great branding. The brand association with hook and loop and Velcro is just phenomenal.
I mean the printing press is pretty high.
But see, we would have got to computers eventually without the printing press.
Well, but we would have got to airplanes eventually without the wheel.
What about plastic?
Although the wheel, I
would argue plastic is one of the worst inventions.
Well, for the environment, yeah.
Well, that's kind of what we
printing
got
press. There, thank you.
Yeah, this Number is one? From the Ohio State University. Shout out Jason Day.
And Jack Nicholas.
Yeah, it looks like a power ranking of greatest inventions.
Okay, so here we go. Printing press, number one. Electric light, number two. Yeah, that seems fair. Automobile, number three. Telephone, four. Radio and television are lumped together in five. Six, vaccination. Seemingly tough time for vaccination this year. Computer, number seven. Airplane is eight. Gas-powered tractor is nine. How about... I'm going with number 10. Well underranked. Anesthesia. Could you imagine going in any procedure without anesthesia? I'm saying that is underranked. 10.
Go watch anesthesia. Go watch Castaway with the ice skate.
Ugh,
when he knocks brutal. His, you know, molar out. Hold on, pull the list back up. The automobile is overrated. I'll just say that. It's overranked there. That is way too high. Get on. I mean,
that's a big tipping point in our society.
Ride a bicycle.
But think about the amount of time that is saved, the shipping that is, the deliveries, the grocery deliveries that can be made with the automobile.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. Greg's all about. You need to start walking the course, Greg. You got to walk the course front, back. You got to like know the nuances of your grocery store.
Yeah, I think you're right. See, here's another problem. You bring that up. We had this grocery store here called Fairway Market. It was fantastic.
Fairway Market, and you didn't walk it?
No, I did. I actually went to this one, and I quite enjoyed it. They played nice music. It was it was a friendly place. It was great selection with great prices. But all of a sudden, it closed, which was a complete shock to me. I was blindsided. And so in the search for the new one, and I've had to find new grocery stores a lot, and I've had a hard time. Like when I was a single man moving around from place to place, the new grocery store was always a big fear of mine. And I would go usually only once.
This sounds like you might actually need counseling over this subject matter.
Jacob and I can take this offline.
All right. I'm going to hard pivot us here to the DP World Tour Championship. That is a golf event that is being played in Dubai this week. And this is their grand finale. I guess this is the last hurrah, Greg, for the European Tour. So it's going to be the DP World Tour, which is going to be weird because that's what this event is called, DP World Tour Championship.
And it has been for a while now, which they've been a partner for quite some time, and they've had DP World, that is, and the European Tour have had a long-lasting partnership that has only grown. And now it's come to the point where they're title partners. So it's really grown. But it is kind of interesting that the final event of the European Tour, as we know it, is the DP World Tour Championship. That's just a little bit interesting. But from here on out, it's going to be the DP World Tour. And it is aptly named. If you're going to have a title sponsor, having World in it, I think makes a lot of sense because it is such a global tour. But this should be an interesting event. It's drawing a lot of really big names.
Yeah.
And we do have some Americans, two in particular, who have a chance to win in Colin Morikawa and Billy Horschel. This is always the interesting thing when players from the PGA Tour have a chance to win the race to Dubai on the European Tour. It's quite interesting. But a lot of that has to do with majors and WGCs and things like that.
If I was Bernd Wiesberger or Minwoo Lee, I'd be pretty upset that these guys are coming over and snaking this away from them. There is a pretty stacked field here, KP. Rory McIlroy is your favorite. He's 6-1. Colin Morikawa is there, 8.5-1. You've got Matthew Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, Sergio Garcia, Abe Anser, Terrell Hatton, Paul Casey, Billy Horschel. So a laundry list of names here. And certainly because of performances in the co-sanctioned events, the WGCs, the major championships, it is certainly viable and enticing for these guys to come over and try to win this thing.
For sure. Do we know what the bonus pool is? I looked for it earlier and I couldn't figure out. I Googled a ton, and maybe I'm just bad at Googling, but I know before it was like 5 mil for the entire race to Dubai. And I think the winner got 2 mil. Now the DP, the actual tournament, the DP World Tour Champion. What is it? The DP World Tour Championship.
Yes.
Yeah. That the winner of that gets 3 mil. So that's a more like, regardless of the race to Dubai, that's a more lucrative outcome if you win that, in and of itself. But I, going back to the, going back to the fact that Horschel, like, Morikawa is probably going to win this. It would be shocking if either him or Horschel didn't win it. And it kind of made me wonder, and this is, I don't know if this is a hot take, maybe a tepid take, if should majors be like co-sanction, or should they just, it seems like majors should just be their own thing. Like, it seems weird that somebody like Morikawa, who wins the Open, I don't know, I guess the Open is like fundamental to the European Tour, So maybe that's a different, I don't know. It just, it seems odd that you would be able to win. Like, you could play a PGA Tour schedule. You could never leave the United States and lead the race to Dubai. And that just seems like very strange. Right.
I see where you're coming from. I guess in theory, you have an event in China, you have an event in Mexico, that are WGCs, right? This is the PGA Tour schedule, but you got to veer off a little bit. You're going to have to play in this event, which is in Dubai, and you'd have to play in Scotland at some point. But I totally understand your point. You can win the European Tour race to Dubai without really playing a European Tour schedule, which is very interesting. But these are the biggest events, and they're the best players in the world are on the PGA Tour, and they get double points. They get points that count in both places when they play here. So I understand the concern, but you can see in the system how it works. The biggest events, the best players are playing, and it's mostly PGA Tour players. So it's a little hard to understand from that perspective.
Well, and I think it's interesting that an American has never won the race to Dubai, right? Not Tiger, not, you know, I'm trying to think of Fred Couples, somebody like that who had a great, like, kind of a, you know, played really well in the majors and played often. But going back to 1972, an American has never won it. And it was mostly like, I mean, the list of guys that have won it is unbelievable. Seve, Faldo, Norman, Ian Woosnam, Colin Montgomery won it like 10 times. Ernie Els, Retief Goosen. And I do wonder if it's a little bit symbolic of where we're at with everything, that an American would win it, or that not an American even, but primarily a PGA Tour player who's also an American would win it now, as it seems like this transition of like a global, and I don't know how it's going to play out, but like this big global merger of the European Tour and PGA Tour begins to happen. I wonder if we'll look back and kind of look at 2021 as a little bit of symbolism that was taking place.
Morikawa and Horschel, as you mentioned, KP, they can win the Race to Dubai title, while four others, non-Americans, could potentially claim the crown with a victory. But this is where we go back to that, you know, kind of the previous tour championship format, which is like, we've got to add up the points of this event and see what happens. I wonder if they'll eventually kind of go to the they could go to staggered. Has the staggered strokes thing, has that been well received? Would other tours emulate that?
I would say it's getting better. Initially, I don't think it was well received at all, but as time has gone on and through three renditions, I think people are starting to understand where that comes from, and the event itself becomes much more. It accomplishes a couple of goals, at least. There are definitely some positives. I, for one, didn't really see very many positives at all, but I think it definitely improved the value of the previous two playoff events, the Northern Trust and the BMW. And I also think it simplifies the format in the actual tour championship. And so it, because the starting strokes are so valuable, the players take their standings in the FedEx Cup very seriously, at least for the two playoff events.
There is also going to be a little bit more difficulty for Americans, KP, moving forward. This might be one of the last bites at the apple, which I've been saying a lot recently. I like that saying. because they've gotten rid of two WGCs, right? There's not going to be the Mexico event and one other one off the schedule. China. Yeah. So there are, you would now have two fewer WGCs. You'd still have the major championship. So it will probably become even less likely that an American could go over.
But you did add one. You added the Scottish Open.
The Scottish Open.
And the Barracuda and the Barracuda and the Barbasol are also co-sanctioned.
But nobody who's going to play those are going to be in contention for this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe, but like, Billy Horschel is in second because he won the BMW PGA, right?
Right.
Like he went over and won Wentworth. It wasn't because he was necessarily great at, I can't remember where he finished in the major championships, but.
Well, he won the match play.
Oh, that's right. Yep. That's right.
That's a WGC. That's a lot of points.
So even if even if this was like next year and you took away the ones that they're taking away, Horschel still would be in the position that he's in because you're keeping match play. Obviously he can go play the BMW PGA championship if he wants. But yeah, I did you see Horschel's quotes today, by the way?
Yes. I didn't see all. I can pull them up, but he was while I find this KP, he was basically advocating for less players on tour, wasn't he?
He was kind of advocating for making the purses on tour more top heavy and reducing the number of players that keep their card, reducing the tournament size. Reducing what else here, Greg? Like Korn Ferry graduates, perhaps?
Yeah, 30 to 50. So he wants to give out 100, and he was throwing out numbers, but he wants to cut it from 125 cards to 100 cards, 50 Korn Ferry Tour graduates, which is the 25 and the 25 from the playoffs, the Korn Ferry Tour finals, and making that 30 instead of 50. But I don't know what you guys think about this, but I don't think that improves the competition. I also think there is massively top heavy payouts on the PGA Tour. I mean, we see it in one and done every week. You remember what happened with Webb Simpson finishing one shot out of a playoff, and his earnings drop way down. You just take the FedEx Cup Finals, the FedEx Cup Championship. You have the winner wins $15 million. 126th place makes $70,000. That's a huge difference. And so I don't know. I don't think his ideas are in this case, and I'm a fan of Billy's, but I don't think his ideas carry much weight. Also, yeah. Reducing field size, correct me if I'm wrong, but that doesn't improve the competition. We always say a limited field.
Yeah,
it's like it's an asterisk. Just by the probability of math here, you have 156 players. That event's harder to win than a 120 player event.
It in theory, he's right. If there were only 100 tour cards, it would be more competitive under the caveat that they all played every single week or they all played a lot more. You're still going to get guys that play 18 to 20 times, and you're going to have a lot of events where, you know, the top 10 guys don't play. So I don't know if that makes it more competitive because guys are still going to pick their schedules.
And the other thing too, sorry to jump in, Kyle, but the other thing is when you have the dollar amounts, the payouts, the purses, the money that's there on the PGA Tour continues to grow. That is attractive to younger athletes. We saw this is the Tiger effect. We're living it now. We have guys that may have been playing basketball or baseball or football that are playing golf at a much younger age now. It's a much cooler game. Maybe that's just dollar amounts. Maybe it's probably a factor of many things, but that enhances competition. And so when you look at the guys that are on the Korn Ferry Tour, Stephen Alker, a career Korn Ferry Tour player, is clearly a great player, never made it. Those guys create competition for the players that are on tour. And coming in 90th place every year doesn't mean that you're comfortable. Doesn't mean you're not trying. It's really hard. And it's competitive to climb that ladder. And there are guys behind you on the Korn Ferry Tour who are chomping at the bit too. So I don't think shrinking the number of cards increases the level of competition. I just don't think it would have any effect.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. I go back and forth on it. I think it is interesting because we've been talking about, okay, what's the avenue to get the best guys more money because they're the ones that bring in the money. And this is actually a pretty, if you make the purses more top heavy in any given event, I think that actually kind of accomplishes that without having this ridiculous PIP program and you know everything else that's going on. But then, you know, on the flip side, you get a ton of like inequity where I mean I saw Rory talking today, and you hear this from top guys a lot, Rom, whoever. It's like, I don't really play for money. And so all of a sudden you get all these guys that are not playing for money, getting all the money, and all these guys that actually are like Kevin Kisner who are playing for money, not getting any money. And it's like, I don't know how you kind of like reconcile that.
Are we on a collision course for a major format or structural change? Right. I mean, these guys have been independent contractors forever, and it seems like there's been more conversation from the members themselves, from whatever, of this not working, whether that's small, medium, large, whatever. So, Greg, are we on a collision course for a complete restructuring of how the game of golf / the PGA Tour works?
No, I think you'll see gradual changes. You may see the fall series that has been promoted already. Maybe there's a team event in a series or something along those lines. But I'm not sure that's a major structural component. One of the draws among the big players has been, hey, the draw to the tour, as opposed to some of the other ideas that have been floated around, is we get to choose our schedule. That's a big draw. And I don't think the players would come together, because this is a tour of the players, by the players, for the players, right? They make this up. I don't think you're going to see them vote to change the structure of play, but you may see changes in the way guys get paid. You may see some more guaranteed money, more things like that, which I think fine.
Go ahead, Rick. I want to hear what you mean by structural changes.
So you start comparing it to other sports, right? What if there were 100 tour cards and purses were drastically reduced, but you had a salary, $500,000, $1 million. As long as you play 15 events, you get your salary. Well, now everyone who's not a top 10 guy is loving life because they've got a guaranteed payment like you would get in other sports and the opportunity to tap into purses still based on your play. Could the game be restructured in a way that still gives the best players plenty of upside, which they're also getting off the course, and also secures much more guaranteed money for the lower guys? I feel like we're looking at this backwards. I know the big guys pay the bills and do all the marketing and all that stuff, and they're going to get theirs, but you're right, Kyle. Like, a lot of them, and maybe they just say this, they don't care as much about the money, but they're making so much money. Does another $8 million matter? Does another $5 million matter? I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I think what you're saying of having a baseline salary would actually make the Korn Ferry a lot more interesting, right? Because all of a sudden the Korn Ferry thing is weird right now, because you graduate and you have all these cool moments, but then it's like that guy might get 7 starts the next year. And so and none of it is guaranteed. And so it's a little bit of like it's just not as meaningful as maybe it could be. And I haven't thought, I'm just riffing off the top of my head. I think one interesting just idea in all of this is I think a lot of what everybody's getting at could be solved by contracting the number of tournaments, right? Mm-hmm. Like at the highest level. And so you don't have to have like 51 tournaments on the PGA Tour, right? So if you had 40 or 35. I mean, think about that in the NFL. There's all this talk about, 17 games, 18 games, 20 weeks, whatever. And it's like, is that a good idea? Or is it better to reduce things, make the, and I get it. Like, it just, and this goes back to what I was talking about a couple of weeks or maybe last week, where it's like, is this just like a marketing vehicle where you're going to have to, you're basically just having to leverage your product to be for marketing, to be able to keep up with everything? Are you going to have 200 events in a year to be able to pay Justin Thomas? Like, is that what we're going for here? And I know I'm making a ton of different points, but I think that I think what somebody like Horschel is getting at here could be solved a little bit by reducing the number of tournaments and not having everything so spread. It's crazy that somebody gets 500 FedEx Cup points for winning the John Deere and somebody gets 600 for winning the Masters. That's insane. Like, that is truly, that is ridiculous. And and that the purses would even be within a couple million of each other. The John Deere purse is what, 7 mil? The Masters is like 10 or 11. That's crazy. I'm sorry. Like that is not like, that's part of the problem here. Maybe that's what Horschel is getting at, but I think you could solve a lot of that. And I don't want the people of where's the John Deere, Illinois, to go. I don't want them to get mad at me and for me saying that John Deere needs to go away. But I think like you don't need 50 events in a year.
There is a good thing and a benefit in providing playing opportunities for players. And there's nothing that says you have to try to play all these events. There's nothing that says you have to watch all the events. But it's hard for me to say we're going to take events away to make the other ones more important. If you bring up a good point with the FedEx Cup points, though, because the reason the FedEx Cup points are level, purses vary, but the FedEx Cup points are level, that's to try to attract players to every event equally, so you can choose your own schedule. If you wanted to get the marquee players, the biggest names competing in the same fields more often, I'm not sure you have to do that. But if you did want to go down that path, staggering the FedEx Cup points for the winner and the entire system would be a viable option to do that. But Rick, I wanted to address the minimum salary for the base guys, because they basically have done that in two ways. One from 126 to 150, which again, those guys, they lose their card, but they still get a piece of the FedEx Cup bonus pool. They get 70,000. That number is going to continue to go up. And now if you play 15 events on tour, if you miss 15 cuts, you play 15 events, you get $50,000. So you have a minimum.
If you miss 15 cuts, you are losing money on that 50K in travel.
Yeah. Yes, you are. And that's something that could be addressed. I mean, I expect that number to go up. I think it's a starting point. I expect it to climb. You should not be playing the PGA Tour, the highest level, the one of the best, let's just say 200, because of all the different ways you can get starts and cards, right, and things like that. You're one of the top 200 people in your field, and you might lose money playing. That's an issue to me. So I've always been a believer that players who miss the cut should get paid. Now, I don't think it should be a huge sum of money, but I think they should make $3,000-$5,000 or something like that. And the FedEx Cup, the 15 event minimum is a way to circumvent that. And so it kind of made me feel like they were doing something right by the players. But that's going to do it goes a long way. $120,000, if you can get inside the top 150, at least covers your expenses.
I think last word, Kippy.
This is such an interesting conversation because there's so many different ways to look at it. Like, you can look at it from the tournament's perspective, from the network's perspective, from the tour's perspective, from Korn Ferry player's perspective, from Rory's perspective. I mean, there's just so many, like, it's, I don't really think other sports are necessarily like that, as at least like the tentacles, there aren't as many tentacles in a Major League Baseball and an NBA. It seems to be more linear, like more straightforward. But in golf, there's just so many different ways to look at things. Last thing I'll say on this, just to stir the pot a little, I was thinking about this. What if, like, we're talking about money, we're talking about all this different stuff. What if next year, like, what if next year in February, Fred Ridley, chairman of Augusta National, gets up, holds a press conference, invites everybody in and says, we are not going to have a purse for our event this year. We're not going to pay anybody any money. Nobody's making a dollar. Would anybody not go?
No.
It's like the Ryder Cup.
Which is fascinating, right? Like, that is super, like, it's so interesting to have something that is that different in your sport. Whereas if you did that at the BMW or the Northern Trust, I think the Northern Trust is going away. That's a bad example. BMW Championship. Nobody would go. I mean, some guys would go, maybe. I don't know. I don't know who would go.
More guys would skip.
So I feel like we're trying to like compare all these like equal things, but they're not the same thing at all. And so we sometimes tie ourselves in knots trying to like compare things that are like just completely like in completely different on completely different planets.
We are coming up on a time of year where we can continue to hash out these ideas and madness and theories along the way, but we're going to talk about this week's RSM Classic. We're going to give our best bets. We're going to give our expert picks. We're going to give our one and done selections. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
And we're back. All right. RSM Classic. Best bets. Greg, we're going to Sea Island. And not one, but two courses. Talked about it on the Monday preview, the DFS preview. These guys are going to have to play the Seaside and the Plantation course over the first 2 days. This is an event. It hasn't been around that long. I think 2010 was the first year, but it always gets a real strong contingent, especially from like the Sea Island guys, the guys that play well here. It's usually a decent field. And we have more of the same this year.
Yeah, you typically make what you will of the field, whatever the official strength of field number ends up being. I don't know, but you get a good tournament here, and it brings a lot of guys into play. It's, again, we're in this territory, as we discussed yesterday, and you pointed out, Rick, we're in the territory where driving accuracy becomes really important, and the importance on distance goes down. And so it brings the whole field into play, and it creates a really competitive event. You get a lot of playoffs here. I believe the last three, maybe six out of the last 11 have ended in a playoff.
Yes, correct.
So it's highly competitive, and you get bunch leaderboards, and it'll lead to some exciting golf, especially on Sunday.
The entirety of this, I'm going to try to do quick math here, but we've had, I think, 10 years. I think it's 11 years. And the combined winning margin is like 13 strokes, and six of those were Kisner 1 year. It just goes to a playoff. Like, every single year we get a playoff here. Three in a row, 19 under par. That's what you're going to get.
Three in a row at exactly 19 under. And four out of five, we had that. We had the, I don't know if it's famous. It is in our world. The five-man playoff back in, 2016?
Yeah, who won it?
Who won that? Mackenzie Hughes?
Okay, who else was in it?
Blaine Barber.
Yeah, that's one.
Camilio Villegas.
Two.
Kisner?
No.
It was somebody else. Like,
we talked
about
this guy a lot today already.
Horschel.
Billy Horschel.
And
I'm not sure you'll get the last one. I'd be impressed.
He's Scott Brown?
No, not a bad guess. He's a Swede who's playing this week.
Oh, Henrik Norlander.
Alex Norlander.
Norlander?
Really? In 16 he was? Wow.
Yeah. Bruh, five-man playoff. Mackenzie Hughes won it for $1.08 million. So let's talk about who could win this week. But we're not going to start with our winners. We're going to start with our best bets. So this is where we go over to Caesar Sportsbook. We scour every inch of the site. Jacob even said we could pick a DP World Tour bet. None of us did that, but we could have if we wanted to. That's the type of research that we're doing here. And we come back with our very best bet. Most of the time they lose, but sometimes we do okay. Greg, why don't you get us off on the right foot here with a winning best bet, please.
Okay, my winning best bet for the week, and this one may be a surprise to some, especially if you're writing articles in Golf Digest, and it's Kevin Kisner, top 20.
Is that a 20. Shot at me?
Well, this last week we had this thing too, where my guy.
Specific.
Well, I read. I'm choosing my bets. I'm going through everything, and I see this. I read the golf publications nearly daily, and one of the things I come across is an article by Rick Gaiman, and okay. So and it was about Kevin Kisner, one of the guys to possibly fade. And so I'm here we go again. Last week, I loved Cam Smith as a top 10. Rick liked him as a fade. He came and tied 15th. So this week, I really like Kevin Kisner. And I'll explain why. Because the performance of late after his win at Wyndham hasn't been great. But he is a player with a very specific type of course. And his course type is very important to him. When he gets on shorter golf courses, he does very well. And so I was looking at some of his numbers. If you look at recent form in this way on the small golf courses, what he did last year at the RSM, he came in second. At the Sony, he came in tied 32nd. He missed the cut at the RBC Heritage, which was surprising. Tied 5th at the Travelers, tied 8th at the Rocket Mortgage, and 1st at Wyndham. So in he had 4 top 10s on tour last year. All 4 of them were on golf courses I would consider to be small golf courses. And this carries on to other years as well. He had 5 top 10s in 10 events on the small courses. It included a win, a second, and it did include 3 missed cuts. So point being, when he gets on these small golf courses, he does really well. And that can skew, well, conversely, when he gets on bigger golf courses, it can skew some of his numbers. He's not a great long iron player. He's not like Matt Kuchar for a while would do well at the Memorial, a big golf course for a shorter hitter, but he's a great hybrid fairway wood long iron player. Morikawa is just the same. Kevin Kisner is not that way, but he is really good with wedges and he's a really good putter. And so some of these venues really suit his game well. And I believe he goes to a venue like this and thinks I can win. And he said before, he doesn't think he can win every time he goes out to play. He goes to Torrey Pines. He's happy with a T20. And that's the ceiling he puts in his own mind. But a week like this, he thinks he can win. And he is a competitor when he gets that taste of when he gets that taste of competition. And I think it's going to be another really good week for him.
I am not excited to be fading Kevin Kisner. I find him so difficult to handicap, especially for all those reasons, Greg. When he gets on good courses for him, he's much better. All the numbers get skewed. I'm terrified of this fade, but Greg is going with Kevin Kisner, top 20. If he finishes there, he'll get you 2-1 on your money. I called the coach. He is going with Taylor Gooch. A little bit of a bounce back over Adam Scott, -125. Gooch played very, very well. First round leader last week in Houston, faded over the final 3 days. I'm going with another guy who played well last week, Russell Henley, even money over Louis Oosthuizen at -125. Louis making his first start in a while, knocking off the rust. Russell Henley playing well. I think he continues it this week. And KP, you're going with a 3 ball. And you have actually taken a contrarian stance to both the coach and the Greg.
Yes, I have. I'm happy to be going against coach, maybe not so much against Greg. Adam Scott's been playing like kind of underrated, pretty good golf recently. He was not good last week at the Houston Open from tee to green, which I actually don't mind because he's not the type of guy. If you look back at even like his last year where he wasn't playing particularly well for his skill level, he doesn't have a lot of bad tee to green, like back-to-back bad tee to green weeks in a row. And so I'm not deterred by the fact that he did not hit it that well last week. And I like that he was the underdog here. Alex Noren, Kevin Kisner, and Adam Scott. And Adam Scott's the, like, kind of by far the underdog. That for me is, you know, maybe it's not the better course fit because he gets a lot of his value from how long he is off the tee. But I'll take Adam Scott as an underdog over those two for sure.
And the cool thing about these best bets, they could all hit, which is pretty cool. If Kisner finishes T19, then I would hit. Gooch finishes T4, and Scott finishes T5, and Norrin finishes T18. I don't know. They could all hit, which is pretty cool.
That'd be sweet.
That's like trying to middle a game like that you in the NFL or something like that. Okay, so just to recap, I'm going with Russell Henley, even money over Louis Oosthuizen, and Kyle's going with Adam Scott over Kevin Kisner and Alex Norrin. That's plus 200. Similar number, plus 200 for Greg. Kevin Kisner to finish inside the top 20. And the coach is going with Gooch over Adam Scott, minus 125. Those are our best bets for this week's RSM Classic. Let's move on to our expert in quotation picks. This is where we do a sleeper, a top 10, and a winner. Let's start with winners, because we always start with sleepers. That's not really fair. Yeah, let's start with winners. Let's just go for it. Coach is going with said Kevin Kisner. KP, you get to go next. You never get first.
Your boy, I don't deserve to, since I have $543,000 in the one and done. But
yeah, you're gonna go first there. Yeah, for sure.
I'm gonna go with I'm gonna go with your boy Russell Henley. I've got his numbers here that I need to pull up. He's been hitting the ball really well. I get a little concerned about the fact that this is a course where, if you look historically, it's been like a good putting week is basically just it can turn into not a tee to green contest, but like just whoever putted it really well that week. And I think that's that just happens on easier courses. You see that at the John Deere, you see it at different places where scoring is really low, and he has not been putting very well, which concerns me a little bit. But let's see here. Last 20 rounds, he is fifth in the field in ball striking behind your boy Mito, your other boy Mito, Corey Connors, Johnny Vegas, and Hayden Buckley. So Russell Henley's hitting the ball well. I get a little worried if it turns into a putting contest, and it probably will.
All my boys are the ball striking boys, so that's generally how that works.
Yeah, the BSB.
The BSB, baby. My wife, like 20 years ago, had an AOL screen name that was BSBR 3000, Backstreet Boys Roll to the Year 3000 was the premise. So that just made me think of that.
Our kids will never know the screen name, the joy of screen names.
What was yours?
Mine?
God. Don't act like you can't remember it.
I remember it exactly. It was it's so embarrassing. It was Isofire 711. My birthday, July 11th, 7/11. And I'll never forget it. I remember sitting there thinking about it with my mom. More embarrassing. Isofire 711.
I wish I hadn't asked.
Yeah.
I'm glad I did for our sake.
Well, I wish you hadn't asked.
I wish I hadn't. Thanks for being truthful. Thanks for being honest. My palms are
sweating. Yeah, could you tell? I made that up.
I'll try to make this a little bit better for you, Greg. Mine was, I was a big into the End One mixtape tour. Remember that? And I thought I was going to grow up to be the professor. Right?
Oh, yeah. he was sick.
Yeah, and there was like hot sauce, right? So I was a big fan of, his name was Main Event. So it was like Main Event and then like some numbers, because I was like, I thought I was going to grow up to be an End One mixtape guy. And I had like the, you know, the outfits, and it would see on your shirt, like, oh, is that your head, or am I just dunking on you? Or like, you know, they had those like little quotes or whatever.
Do you remember the cool And One shorts?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They were awesome. Yeah, and one year for Christmas, my parents got me a pair, but they weren't like the good ones. They were just like regular mesh ones with a tiny And One logo.
Without they were like real shiny and like real like whatever that material was.
They had something like on the side too. They were sweet, and they got me like the
yeah. Yeah, there's that material.
Yeah, those are the ones I wanted, and that's not what I got. I got a just a different variation that was a disappointment. My screen name was KP23 Baseball. So not,
I could have guessed
not embarrassing.
That.
Not embarrassing.
I, yeah.
You're way cool.
Yeah, that was way too cool.
I foresaw the future 25 years later when I would have to share it on a podcast with other people.
All right, Kyle's going with Russell Henley. I think we covered that. Coach has Kevin Kisner. I'm going with baby swag. Confirmed it, Greg. They had the baby. Corey Connors, yes. Baby swagging his way around Sea Island this week. 25-1. I love the ball strikers. I'm going with Corey Connors. And that leaves just you, Greg, for our winner. Who is it?
I'm going with Cameron Smith. He has not played here yet, but I'm seeing a really big improvement in his ball striking game, especially his approach play. And he's been playing some really good golf of late. Tour Championship was tied 14th. After that, a T9 at the CJ Cup and T15 in Houston. And I think he's going to start to find a little bit of a rhythm here and get himself into the winner's circle. He's such a good putter. He's so good on and around the greens. And I'm seeing that approach play really start to climb up and become an asset for him. And I think this week he's going to be able to put it all together.
Kisner for Coach, Cam Smith for Greg, Russell Henley for KP. I'm going with Corey Connors. Top 10. I'll make this quick on my side because I agree with everything that KP said about Russell Henley. Plus 333. Bless you, Isofire.
Excuse
for
me.
Russell
yes.
Henley, top 10. Coach is going way down the board. You didn't think I was going to let that not happen, right?
Well, I was hoping not. I was scrambling for the mute button and I was looking in the wrong spot. I was panicked.
That's all right. Patton Kizzire for the coach, 10-1. Maybe the coach knows something that we don't know. Patton Kizzire, 10-1 to finish inside the top 10 this week. KP, you're going with much shorter odds for someone to finish inside the top 10.
Yep. Weber, Webb Simpson, top three in two of his last three starts here. He's had a weird year in that he hasn't, this would be his first calendar year in which he hadn't finished in the top three in any event, but he also has finished in the top 20 in like, I think 70% of the tournaments that he's played in, something like that.
Yeah.
And so he's like right on that edge of, he's not playing at a top 10 clip in the world, but he's still playing at a top 25 clip. But because he was at that top 10 clip for 3 years, basically, or I guess 2 years, it makes it seem like he's playing worse than he actually is. So all that to say, I like Webb to finish top 10 this week in a field that's kind of below where he normally exists.
I am very bullish on Webb Simpson moving forward. Had a weird year with injury and the virus, and like he's going to be just fine. But books were not. They were ready for this moment with the numbers that they laid on Webb Simpson. And Greg, we've got a familiar name here for you inside the top 10, my friend.
Yeah, keep this quick. Kevin Kisner for me. I outlined all those reasons in my best bet. I think he's going to finish in the top 10. I like for safety. I like and needing a win in the best bets. I like the number at top 20, but I do think you're going to see a top 10 out of Kisner.
4-1 if he gets it done to finish inside the top 10 for Kevin Kisner. Sleepers. Coach is going with Doug Gim. Coach is embracing the long odds on this board. Kisner at 33, Kizzire at 10-1 to finish inside the top 10, and Doug Gim 125-1 is his sleeper. I'm going with Adam Long. And Greg, we talked about this on Monday. You know what you're going to get. It's a missed cut or it's a top 30. That is what, yes, Adam Long has done for 28 consecutive events. Impossible. But this is kind of the last one of these events, or maybe when we get to like American Express, where I think he can really contend. So I'm going to run him out here.
I really like it, Rick. I had him before looking at the full board of numbers. He was in my mind as a great sleeper for the week. But I did come across a number on Max Homa. And so I went with Max Homa as my sleeper. And the reason for that, we also talked about this on Monday a little bit. There's a very clear hinge point for him. And if he putts well, he finishes inside the top 10 near, and he contends for the win nearly every week. I love the consistency off the tee. I love the consistency approaching the green. And the putting is not great. But when it is, and it is every once in a while, every 8 events or so, it pops up. And he gets himself in a positive situation. And when he does that nearly every time, at least of late, it's a really solid contention for him. So I like taking the chance on a guy who just needs the putter to cooperate. And it's happened before for him.
Max Homa 60-1, two starts removed from victory at the Fortinet. And as we saw, what Greg was alluding to, when he putts, he contends. KP, your final pick, the final pick of the segment, your sleeper for this week's RSM Classic.
Johnny Vegas, 66-1. He's third in this field in ball striking over his last 20 rounds behind, I said this earlier, but Mito and Corey Connors. Putting's not good, but 66-1 is pretty long for somebody who's hitting the ball that well.
Long shots. Adam Long, Johnny Vegas, Max Homa, Doug Gim for the crew over here, which leaves us with one final thing to do. That is our one and done. And KP, I'll just stick right here with you, brother, because you've got $543,927. You are in seventh place out of seven. And we are looking for some big time cash this week from you.
Yeah, I'm going Russ Henley. I don't have a ton to say. We already talked about him a lot, but I will say I'm glad that I'm on an island again, because I need to be on, I'm on Sea Island, I guess. I need to be on a bunch of islands over the next few months. So, yeah, I'm going against the grain with who everybody else picked, which I'm glad for. That's a little bit of what I was trying to do.
Yeah, I cannot shake Mark right now, which is super annoying. So I like the idea of being on an island to yourself. Sian Ajad, $622,000 is going with Corey Connors. The coach, $2.1 million is going with Kevin Kisner. And Greg, you've got a $10,000 lead on the coach, and it will remain exactly that no matter what happens, because you two are going with Kevin Kisner.
Yes. Again, I explained all the reasons why. No, I did say Cam Smith was my winner for the week. I'm not as confident in him actually winning the tournament as I am Kisner performing really well. And so for that reason, I went with the safe play. I'm playing Kisner here. There's not a lot of other venues where I feel like I have to play Kevin Kisner, where I do think Cam Smith may be headed for a breakout year and may be more valuable for me later on. So that's why I went Kevin Kisner over Cam Smith.
$2.1 million for Greg. I'm at $2.5 million. I went with a guy playing in his third week, trying to get a little bit better finish each time. Runner-up last week, Scotty Scheffler. I think in practice, KP, or in theory, I could save Scheffler, because he's been great at majors. He's been great all over the place. But I think in practice, when I got to other places next year, I would probably just not play Scotty Scheffler at some of those events.
Like at, let's say, Tulsa for the PGA. I mean, that'd be, it'd be a great spot for him, but it would be hard. He's just a weird guy to try and figure out where to play, because he hasn't won, but he's seemingly a really good major player. And so, yeah, I don't mind it here. I don't think I've used him. I want to save him for like a WGC or something like that. Maybe match play again.
You have not used him. You used Kevin Na, Keegan Bradley, Patton Kizzire, Victor Hovland.
Nobody needs to, look at this. Morikawa. It's been horrible. I used Morikawa.
Yeah, that was your biggest win, 259,000. At Zozo. It's been a tough
start. Not good.
Yikes. Plenty of events left. Jacob, producer Jacob, look at, whoa, $2.99 million. You are $1,640 away from the $3 million mark. Do you think you will get it this week?
I really hope I do. I mean, I'm getting Corey Connors, so I think I'm going to go with the baby swag ride that momentum, which baby swag would also be an excellent screen name. If
what was yours?
I don't know.
No.
I never did those online chat rooms like that. But
yes,
you never did. A profile.
I think I'm a little too young for the AOL. I mean, I had a.
How old the AOL?
Xbox user.
Doesn't sound too young.
No.
Okay,
no,
what was your
you sound
Xbox,
too old.
What was your Xbox username?
The original one was actually my brother's account, so it was just Chad 4633, which is hilarious.
I'd be playing,
would be yelling at a Chad, which was me.
You're just avoiding the question.
I didn't have one.
You're dodging. You're like Tiger at a press conference.
What's your burner Twitter handle?
burner, right? There we go.
There is one. That defeats the whole purpose of the burner. It's not even a fun burner. It's a burner so that I can tweet stuff out to see if it's formatted correctly before I do it on the official handle.
It should be like use golf facts is my burner.
Use golf.
Go follow Use Golf Facts. Good luck, Jacob. If you were living in Greg's PGA, even with a missed cut, you might be able to get $1,600 paying the guys that missed the cut.
Oh, I got some takes about that, but we don't have time.
That shouldn't be official money to me. Just, you know, help the guys out a little bit.
I want under the table cash.
Yeah. Help the guys out, play better.
I want to give a salary to 50 guys, and then anyone below that, just like, tough luck. You got to impress someone. I want golf to be gatekeep. Like, we need a gatekeeper for golf, and it's not a meritocracy. Like, I'm here for the entertainment product. I just want like 20 events a year, and I don't even want the best 50 players in the world to be playing. I want the most interesting 50 people in the world.
So you want to actually do the PGA like the WWE, and you might lose guys to the AEW, but like, it's going to be fun every Monday, Thursday, and whatever.
Exactly.
It's like the silly season, right?
Yeah.
We need some guys with personality. Yeah.
We need like the equivalent of Monday Night Raw, but just like for the PGA Tour.
I got it.
It does feel a little bit like everybody is like, oh, it's a meritocracy. And JT and DJ and Rory are like, is it though? Because I don't think it is.
I mean, especially, I don't want to go throwing people under the bus, but they, you know, you have people who are playing who you say, should they be playing this week?
Is the purple Mamba in the field? JJ Henry?
I haven't looked at the bottom of the field this week, but I mean, you could just look at Bermuda and ask questions there. That's all else.
Bermuda, they couldn't even fill that field, could they? Okay.
No.
Jacob is at 2.9 million. JJ Henry is not in this field. 2.9 million for Jacob. Then gap to Mark, who's at 4.4, and I will not be catching him this week because he also went with Scottie Scheffler, and he is sending us texts from South Africa that I'm genuinely nervous about. Like, will we ever see Mark again? He seems to be encountering a lot of wildlife.
It seems like he's tracking lions.
Yeah, you're supposed to be going the other way.
Yeah. I wouldn't go close to what he's going close to.
All right. Let me recap these selections. Mark, Scottie Scheffler, Jacob, Corey Connors, myself, Scottie Scheffler, Greg and coach, Kevin Kisner, Sia Najad, Corey Connors, Kyle, Russell, Henley. Anything else before we get out of here?
It was a great time.
Right. I mean, I got a lot more takes if you guys got more time.
Yeah, we got a little free time coming up. We can run through.
Rick's trying to get out of here as fast as he can.
No, I'll hang, but my goodness, we got content to fill for the next couple of weeks.
Nah, this is great. It's going to be a fun week. Two good events, and kind of the end of the year before Brooks and Brooksy play next week.
Brooks and Brooksy.
It sounded like a mistake at first. That was well.
I know. 12 rounds. 12 rounds at the win. All right, boys. Big thanks to producer Jacob. Does all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there. It's Kyle Porter. He's flexing. If you're watching on YouTube, there you go. KP, you can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. Greg Ducharme, you can find him on Twitter at The Real GFD.
And Ice of Fire. The Ice of Fire.
And you can find me at Rick Rungood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.